This is a Jerry Pippin special report. We've all heard the sound of a flying saucer landing, in the movies at least. Many movies since the 1950s have had the sound of a flying saucer coming to land. But in real life, it has happened evidently to many people. And it was not as exciting as the movies. It was terrifying. They came, they saw, and they taped. Abductions. E.T. abductions. That's the subject of our show tonight. Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin, and tonight we had the first of two specials in July, and we'll follow up with another special or two in the fall and winter. E.T. abductions, a fascinating concept, something that has been around the UFO business for a while, but we really never have been able to really pin it down exactly. The first abduction that I know about was Benny and Barney Hill back in 1960-something, but it's been going on for a long time. Exactly what is going on? That's the question. And we're going to examine that tonight with a panel of experts, and that'll be coming in with a very interesting show. And the same thing for July 25th, when we'll have a new show with a different panel of experts and a different group of people who have been abducted. There is no shortage of people who are willing to talk about this subject. If you're one of them, and you'd like to get on the show, or at least contact us and give us your story, feel free to write me an email at jerry@jerrypippin.com. In a moment, we're going to talk to Rita Pellegrina Freeman. She's had several abduction experiences, including experiences that led her to believe that she was used to develop hybrids by the ETs. She describes in detail to me the place where these things happen, where half-human, half-alien beings are kept in a warehouse-type facility. She talks about the different species of ETs as well. These are first-hand accounts of those that she has encountered, including reptilians and huge insect-like creatures. That'll be coming up in a moment, so stay tuned. You're listening to our abduction special on the Inception Radio Network.
Rita Pellegrina Freeman, and you're actually from El Paso, right?
That's right.
Okay. Well, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your experience. You were in a book, actually, your experience. Why don't you tell a little bit about that first for our listeners?
Okay.
What was the name of the book, and who was the guy that wrote it or whatever?
The name of the book is The God Hypothesis, and it's written by who used to be our MUFON director in El Paso, Texas. His name is Joe Lulz, who was PhD in communications at our University of Texas at El Paso.
And why did he write about your experience? What happened about that? First of all, are you still in MUFON? Do you still go to the meetings?
We had a wonderful El Paso MUFON group for a while, and now
it's kind of disappeared.
That's
huh?
correct. That's correct. I guess persons have other issues to deal with.
Well, MUFON's coming back and forming, getting some meetings going. So maybe I've been invited to the one in Irving, Texas to speak. So maybe we'll make it to El Paso one day.
Yeah, we need our group again.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, if we may, the experience you had and why it made the book.
I'm a person who grew up in El Paso, the Chamisal area, and since my first conscious recollection of an abduction was at age eight, when my friends, my brothers and sisters were out in our backyard on a summer night, 1955. We had this object come overhead, and I remember the kids looking up at it, And after a while, I felt this electricity go through my body. At that moment, I saw my brothers and sisters and friends, my neighbor's kids seemed to be frozen in place. Next thing I know is that I'm being lifted off the ground, and I'm looking down, but I can't move. I can't talk. I can't run. I'm scared.
Well, I'd be scared, too.
I'm taken into this craft, and that is my first experience. And I said, there were witnesses.
And you were very young at the time.
I was about 8 years old. This was about 1955.
And when you got into this craft, what happened? Do you remember?
Well, I remember I was very scared. I didn't know where I was or what was going on. After that night, I didn't remember anything else. The only thing that I was told, because my family later on told me that I was gone that night and didn't reappear in my backyard till about 4 o'clock in the morning, the following morning.
They must have been worried sick.
The other kids who saw what happened to me called their parents out of their homes, and the whole neighborhood was out looking for me, and everybody was pointing to the sky that something came and took me. And my mother held me, and what I had in my leg was like an incision mark, a scar that I still have on my leg, where it looks as if somebody took a sharp instrument, went in my, like, over my ankle, mm-hmm. where somebody put in a sharp instrument, did an oval, and extracted tissue, because I remember that was the day that I said, I want to, when I grow up, figure out what happened to me, because I can look into my leg and I can see a hole there. I can see the bone in my ankle where tissue has been removed, but there's no blood and there's no pain, and it healed by itself. So I know something happened to me.
Now, you know, 8 years old, you're fairly young at that time. Of course, this made a big impression on you. You'd remember it even then. But do you have any recollection of what happened to you on the craft?
The only thing I remember is that I was taken at that time. After I came back, and my mother and the neighborhood kids and people around there looked at me, they said that my eyes were swollen. I felt like as if I had been, I guess we now refer to it as being drugged, like I had anesthesia, mm-hmm. that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I could not talk. People would ask me, what happened to you? I was too exhausted. The next day and the next day and the next day, I was sick. I was physically ill. And as time went on and my parents and my friends wanted, what happened to you when they took you? I could not remember. There was a period of what I would feel would be amnesia, and it wasn't until I was an adult or a young adult, I started looking into the UFO field for answers.
Did you have dreams about that? Did you recall more, in other words, later on?
I had that experience at age 8, and then later on I remembered experiences at age, 13. I was taken by this group, and that's when I saw the hybrids, what we refer to as the hybrids. And then I had experiences at age 16, 17, 19, and on.
Yeah, have you had any recently, or just when you were early in your 20s and on down?
It wasn't until the age of about 26, 30, when I think that things seemed to level off. I was left with what people refer to as psychic abilities. But even as a young child, I could talk to animals, to plants. Mental telepathy, those things became part of my life, and I attribute those to the ET experience.
Now, in your later abductions or contacts, whichever way you want to refer to it, and how do you refer to it? How do you think about it yourself? Was it friendly or unfriendly?
It was very frightening when it first started out as a child. I didn't understand what was going on, and when they take you, they try to teach you things. I was not a good student with them, I fought them.
When they try to teach you things, what do you mean? They gave you lessons about things or what?
Yeah. In the book that Joe Luce wrote, and also in presentations that I have done in my hometown and also once in Mexico City, I speak about the ETs taking me to other worlds.
And you literally went to another world, or do you think they? Tell us a little bit about that, if you can, or does it bother you to talk about it?
The whole experience to me was difficult emotionally, and there's physical aspects that you have to deal with, the examinations, and the fact that you are part of what people refer to in the UFO community as a hybridization, mm-hmm. a project, the breeding of hybrids.
Yeah, and you think that happened to you?
I know it did.
So you have a hybrid offspring? Or do you know?
Was shown the hybrids at age 13, and that's when I knew that that's what they were doing with my body. New life was being created by them for whatever reason, and I had to accept this as that the ETs were taking part of who I was for whatever else they were working on. But I did not develop like a bond between myself and what would be referred to as my children. I always understood that I belonged as a human being in El Paso, Texas, and the hybrids were meant for some other purpose, and I accepted that.
And have you ever figured out what the hybrids were meant for? That's one of the big riddles, I think.
That's true. Basically, I got the understanding that there's some plan and that the new life was being created. I was given the impression that there was some type of a population problem with the ETs and that they were trying to solve a problem through the hybrids.
What kind of characters or beings were these ETs? Were they always the same type?
I remember that when you're taken, you're escorted by what I guess are referred to as a small grace. And as a young child and being frightened by these experiences, I always was very physically combative.
When you're physically combative, how did they react? Did they hurt you or just?
The little graced, and for the better part, are harmless. They're just there to bring you to the track, do the procedures, and basically they do what they need to do. But because of my lack of cooperation, I was disciplined by, on some occasions, from other beings that are referred to, I guess, reptilian in nature. I also remember specifically a being that looked to me like a 7-foot-tall grasshopper, or what is called the praying mantis type.
So you actually have seen several types.
Yes, and the praying mantis type, I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw this, because that's what they look like. But this being talked with me, mental telepathy, and he explained to me that there were things that needed to be done, and if it would help if I cooperated, and he told me that that I could learn things from them.
Now, when the reptilians disciplined you, what did they do?
The reptilians were physically present at a lot of my experiences. They tend to be really rough mentally and physically on you. They seem to not have a sensitivity towards your situation.
Yeah, did they twist your arms or push you around or beat you or what?
They do procedures, and they do them without regard to your I can't say they tortured me or beat me, but their attitude towards you feel you feel a very aggressive their aggressiveness towards you.
In other words, they didn't have a very good bedside manner.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about what the reptilians looked like. Were they tall, 5 feet, 6 feet, varying sizes? Or do you remember?
Well, I know the small grays. They're 3 feet, 4 feet, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
These other individual reptilian, tall. This is when I was a child.
Okay.
So we're talking tall, 5 feet, 6 feet, very muscular.
With skin that what? Looks like a reptile? Is that the reason we call them reptilians?
They have features that you wonder about, kind of like a snake and a lizard at the same time. Skin is...
Scaly?
Oh, yeah.
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 And now,
and the eyes, kind of like cat eyes.
It pierces right through you, huh?
The yellow cat eyes is
okay.
The way I refer to it.
Now, as you got older, who did you run across? Were there still reptilians, or were there more of other types of beings, or do you remember? I'm thinking in terms of, you know, you said you're 18, 19, 20, something like that. You ought to be able to remember more, maybe not, I don't know.
For the most part, as a young adult, they frightened me so much that I requested that whenever I was with them that I not remember too much about their physical appearance because it always upset me. So
they were able to cloud men's minds.
Like blurry, when I looked at them, kind of like blurred, at least in my memory. I don't have specifics other than the first time I saw them. It was too rough on me, and I told them that I needed...
You got the impression that they took you somewhere else,
yes,
right?
Yes, sir, yes.
Did you have an idea where it was?
In my presentation, I speak about three different worlds that I was taken to because, as strange as it might sound, I got to get to like these guys. They were really rough, and it's a physical, mental strain on you. However, I felt that they were very intelligent beings and that there were many things to learn, and I would ask questions and they would give me answers.
They would actually answer you
and
weren't necessarily condescending or anything. They would actually have a discussion with you.
Yes, and they would ask me if I wanted to go on trips with them, and I would say yes. For a while there, I said, hey, you know, this is a wonderful... other place. This is unusual, but I had a curious mind, and I got to trust them somewhat.
Yeah, I can understand that. So where did you go, do you know?
I remember a world where the inhabitants are in water. They live underwater. I don't know if this was Earth. I believe it was in a different, wholly different location. Where the inhabitants are like half fish, half human.
Wow. Did they communicate by telepathy or these people? I'm trying to figure out how a half fish, half human would talk.
The ETs I was with could communicate with them, and they interpret to me
okay. The
questions I had.
Did they make sounds?
No, they had feelings for some
okay.
some way. There's a way of understanding through feeling.
This is Jerry Pippin, and we have Rita Pellegrino Freeman, and she has been abducted several times, has an incredible story to tell, actually feels that she was a parent of a hybrid. Did those hybrids look anything like you?
In the UFO literature, you see a lot of pictures that other women have drawn of what they feel are their hybrid children. They tend to be small, tiny, little hair. They look fragile.
You really didn't identify with the...
They're not human. There are aspects of them that you would refer to as human. But certainly their physical construction, I don't think, is meant to function our physical world.
Now, we talked about the half fish, half man or type. There are other worlds you went to, too.
I was really very happy to meet other life forms who had, I was under the impression that they had adjusted to this water environment as a result of problems on their
planet.
Own planet. They had to go into the water because they could no longer be outside on the surface because of some harmful energies. So they had to go into the water, and they adapted into the water,
yes,
and
yes.
became happy there. They have good lives there. They live with what we refer to as marine animals, and they have communities. As a matter of fact, this group mentioned to me that they prefer to be left alone. They're content.
Now, the other worlds you went to?
There was a world where I guess we refer to them as light beings, human form, but not real physical. And they didn't walk, they levitated. And there were not sexual, male, female having children. There were no children. There were just, there were males and females, but there was like an exchange of energy for food because they didn't need food. They exchanged energy. But their purpose, what I was told, is that they were volunteers in this environment, and their job was to take care of worlds, take care of plants and animals that had been brought to them from other worlds that had problems, and they were there to be like rehabbed and then
mm-hmm.
distributed to other locations when the time came.
Now, you said there was a third world?
The third place where I was taken was a place where I have to refer to as an insect world. I remember as we approached this planet was also an underground environment in which it seemed as if we were like in a bee honeycomb structure, what we know as how the bees live in their structures with honeycomb.
Mm-hmm.
These were insects who lived in this type of this environment, and actually they had domesticated other insect-type beings, and they lived together. And this was the insect world that I visited.
Now, all of a sudden, these abductions stopped, is that right?
When I was 17, 18, 19, I was in Marine Corps. I'm a former Marine. I was stationed Parris Island, South Carolina. I had abduction experiences there. I had an experience where I was told that we probably would not be seeing each other anymore. I suspect they were telling me this is the conclusion of my part of being hybrid
right,
project.
Yeah, your usefulness.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, basically. So did they, had you connected with anybody during this time? I guess you said you liked some of them after a while.
I had to learn to trust them because whenever they took me and I wanted to learn more and they took me to a different place, I had to trust that they'd bring me back in good health.
When they take you away like that, were you gone for long periods of time or was it just a matter of hours?
We're talking hours, and I suspect probably in 2 days. Apparently they have the ability to where they can take you from a situation and you're gone with them for a long period of time, but they're able to bring you back into almost the exact moment from which they took you. So a lot of times people around you may not even detect that you were gone, but you know that you were.
Well, Lita, I really appreciate you stopping by and telling us your story. And how has it felt after 5 years to come back to a UFO conference like that? Is it a good feeling, or is it bringing up bad memories or whatever?
It's a mixture. I'm trying to make the positive side of this experience, and one of it is that I, as an adult, have answered the question that I had when I was a child and I saw this scar on my leg. What happened to me? I know that it's something that happens to others, and that there are many important and very intelligent persons wanting answers to this type of phenomena.
How many hybrids do you think you were a parent to?
I saw like what would be a warehouse or a huge warehouse of hybrids in glass containers. What I refer
were
to...
Were they alive?
Yes, it's kind of like what the Japanese did in some experiments. They were growing tomato plants in water, hydroponics, mm-hmm. and this is what it looked to me, except this were containers of living fetuses growing in cylinders and being kept in shelves, hundreds of shelves in like a warehouse area.
We could go on and on and on here. Our time's almost up, but I have to ask you, you don't have any maternal feelings for these hybrids? I mean, you know, like you said, they really weren't human.
I had to accept the fact that there was a reason for this new life and that this new life was meant to live elsewhere, and any emotional attachment I had, I could not interfere with this plan.
You personally don't believe the hybrids are among us, walking in the street, working at McDonald's, selling Fords down the street or whatever.
I don't have an answer for that.
Okay, thank you very much, Rita, and good luck.
And with that question, Rita shook her head and got up from the table. It was just too emotional for her, as she had dropped by our booth in Roswell, New Mexico. We have more abduction scenarios and some very interesting observations by some experts in the field coming up. By the way, if you'd like to hear other interviews like Rita's on demand on our website, simply go over to UFOshowsToGo.com. That's UFO Shows and the number 2, togo.com. Stay tuned. Our abduction special is next.